complementary power moves that you can do in the office or on the field or wherever your octagon or dojo of life happens to be. On the House, courtesy of Emerson Dameron, LA's number one avant-garde motivational speaker, if you see somebody you want to get some leverage on and that person asks you if you're having a nice day, say the best day of the rest of your life. They may not like you, but they will damn sure respect you. If you realize that you've said too much and you regret what has tumbled out of your mouth, say to the assembled, I trust you because you are wise enough to keep my secrets. That will shut them up good. This is Emerson Dameron, LA's number one avant-garde motivational speaker and host of Emerson Dameron's Medicated Minutes on K-Chung, kchungradio.org, medicated-minutes.com. I love you personally. Levity saves lives. This is Emerson Dameron, and you're listening to Emerson Dameron's Medicated Minutes on K-Chung, 1630 AM, if you're in the vicinity of the Chinatown neighborhood in Los Angeles, California, otherwise worldwide on the World Wide Web, kchungradio.org. The dedicated site for this show is medicated-minutes.com. I'm Emerson Dameron. I'm the creator, the writer, the producer, the director, the talent, the man behind the dream of Emerson Dameron's Medicated Minutes, who is solely responsible for its content. Levity saves lives. Today is the Halloween edition of Emerson Dameron's Medicated Minutes. I'm going to take the opportunity to go into the places that scare me. And before we get started, I just want to let you know up front that this is what this show is going to be. This is it. It's going to be me talking at you. Under other circumstances, perhaps it would be more of a conversation, a give and take, where you could contribute. And I like that idea a little bit better, at least in theory. I only want free agents on my team. The spectator model is not my favorite. I like something more participatory. I would like to get you in the mix. And perhaps I will on a future edition of this show. But not on this one. This is going to be one-to-many communication. And it's just going to be me talking. And I want to let you know that, because I want to make sure that you're only going to listen to it if you're okay with that. I want this to be entirely upfront and consensual. So, just to let you know, this is just going to be me talking. And if you're down with that, we will move forward together. I suppose something does happen to this when you listen to it. I don't know what that is. I don't really understand it. It's mysterious. It's spooky. And that's the theme of the show tonight. And few things are scarier to me than the blank canvas stretching out in front of me. And I think I've lost many opportunities in life and not gone nearly as far as I could have because I procrastinate on shipping creative product. I've not published as much as I could have. I've not performed as much as I could have, especially not over the last year and a half for obvious reasons. Partly that was a lack of platforms that were available for public performances, but even if those platforms had been available, I may have not availed myself of them because of fear of putting myself out there. What bad things can happen when I publish? I've gotten death threats before. I've had people really hate me just for stuff that I put out on the internet. That's part of what one expects when engaged in that sort of endeavor, and I'd have to say that the positive feedback that I've gotten has been well worth it. I'm not going to toot my own horn, but I've gotten some very kind words only because I summoned the courage to put something out there, to publish, to ship something. And my deepest regret is that I've not done more of that. And one of my deepest fears is looking at that blank page. And so I've created this show in part to challenge myself to put something out there in the most raw possible way that I can. This is unscripted. I barely put any thought into it at all before I hit record. It's unedited. I am making a pact right now with you that I'm going to keep the show going and not go back and cut anything out. And what you're going to get is going to be raw and uncut because I'm facing my fear of the blank page, of the unknown, of putting myself out there. I'm doing all of this for your entertainment. And if it amounts to posting cringe, then it is cringe I will post. And I will pay the wages because it's important to me to get over that fear, to get something out there. And if it's something like this, then it's something like this. And we can take this journey together, or you can turn it off right now and I will go it alone. I'm facing my fears, and honestly, I encourage you to do something similar. If you haven't before, it's incredibly easy to create something like this and to put it out there. The main thing that you have to fear is that no one will care. On very rare occasions, something will get a ton of attention. And a lot of times, a lot of that attention will be positive. Sometimes you'll get negative attention. That might give you some insight on how you want to improve as a person or in terms of the work that you're putting out there into the world. Or it might give you something to define yourself against. Those are all arguably good things. Criticism can sting, but criticism can help. And perhaps only criticism can help. I would say, all else being equal, if you can, it is good to have a really good editor. It can also be frustrating. Some people cannot handle working with editors, and I think that totally makes sense. I get it. Much of my life and much of what I do and say is designed to create the impression that I am not an idiot. But if you have a good editor and you work with that person in good faith and in a spirit of intellectual honesty, your editor is going to
be under no illusions about how big of an idiot you are. And the only way I've ever put really good writing out there is by letting someone behind the curtain to discover the depths of my idiocy and to help me dig myself out of it. And I think a lot of relationships are like this as well. Friendships, after a certain point, that person is gonna know your idiocy. That person will know things that you work really hard to conceal from the world. But right now, today, for you, I got a special treat. I'm cutting out the middleman. And I'm just putting myself out there, raw, uncut, thoroughly idiotic. No idiocy edited out or removed. And you can see for yourself. I'm not hiding anything. This is Emerson Dameron's Medicated Minutes on Kaechung, kaechungradio.org, medicated-minutes.com. Very special episode, the Halloween episode, the spooky season. Build up to the excitement that's coming later in the month of October when we dress up and maybe get out. Maybe for you it's going to be on Zoom again this year, and that's all right. Halloween is coming, and we're celebrating today on the show by going to the places that scare us. And I am going first. I'm going to the places that scare me. Right here. Live. And it's being recorded. You can listen back at any speed. You can listen in reverse. And then go back and listen to the whole thing again, forward, if that's what you want to do. You can take out stuff and recontextualize it. I may not be happy with what you do, but there's not a whole lot I can do to stop it. I would appreciate a link back to medicated-minutes.com, but there's only so much I can do about what happens to this. When it goes out into the world, I'm setting it free. And I can hope for the best. And I think generally it is better to create something and put it out there than it is to create something and not put it out there. But I think either of those things is better than not creating something. I would encourage you, if this is something you're nervous about at all, and it's possible that everyone who listens to this show is a bold visionary who, if anything, could stand to err on the side of caution in creative endeavors. But I don't think that's all of you. And I would say, if you specifically are nervous about putting your creations into the world, then I would, right now, just make something. It could be a post or video or a recording like this one, or a ebook that you sell on Gumroad for, let's say, $1.50, whatever that is in your currency where you are. Just put that out there and see what happens. The likeliest thing is that nothing will happen. But you may be surprised, and it may make ripples that you're not aware of that have very minor effects that change the world in very minor ways, but that might make it a little bit more to your liking, or at least you'll be scrawling "I was here" on the ontological chalkboard. And I find that thrilling. And I think the resistance I feel to doing that, the feeling that makes it so frightening a lot of the time, is the sign that it is the thing to do more of. Go toward the things that scare you as much as you can, unless you're pretty sure that you have very good reason to fear those things. We have a negativity bias in how we perceive the world. We evolved in a much harsher landscape than we currently live in. And we learn to be fearful of large predators, of starving because we were alienated from the tribe. That's that fear of rejection. Most of that stuff doesn't really apply to the circumstances that we face right now. We're probably not going to be whisked out of the gene pool as easily as our ancestors were by risk-taking. So I would encourage you to ship something. Put something out there. If that's something that scares you, then that means the thing that you make is likely to be something that I'd want to see in the world. And if it's something you want to see in the world, that's what matters. A good chance no one will see it, and that's fine. You'll, at the very least, have it done and possibly have some ideas for the next thing you want to do. So what I would say is, if you're scared to make something and then ship it, especially if you're scared to ship something that you made. If you get nothing else out of listening to this, then I hope that that is useful. And if you have a chance to work with an editor or a collaborator, or if you have a chance to let someone see how much of an idiot you are, that's another good threshold to cross. I think my recommendation would be to create as much of your own stuff as you can and put it out there at first, just to develop a style and a voice, and then there will be something there to critique when you're ready to let someone in. But especially if your entire life is designed to distract people from noticing that you're an idiot, there is such relief, such profound relief to be gained from letting people in, or at least working with an editor who you trust, who is well aware of that, and can help you go from full-blown idiocy to creating great work that helps people. And I'm just going to check in, because this is still all that this is. If you continue listening to this show, you are going to hear me talking at you for the balance of the hour. A full 60 minutes. Are you on board with that? If so, then we will continue. You're listening to Emerson Dameron's Medicated Minutes on KHL. In the spirit of spooky season and going in the places that scare me, I can share one of the big ones. And it's easier now than it would have been in the past for me to talk about this because I think I'm doing pretty well with my issues with alcohol abuse. For a very long time in my life, I had an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. Started early on. Very early on in my life, I think the conditions were set for me to have an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. I have been very anxious for most of my life. And that has translated into severe social anxiety and aversion when I'm surrounded by other people. I tend to shut people out because I find other people terrifying a lot of the time. That started when I was in kindergarten. On my first day of kindergarten, I felt like a terrible mistake had been made. I was surrounded by enemies. I was in the wrong place. So I went to the grown-ups, confident that they would sort things out. And I explained my situation, that I was here and clearly I wasn't supposed to be, so some mistake had been made. And I trusted that they could rectify that. And I was informed that this was how things were supposed to be, but that if I got through the day, I could go home and be by myself and not be around other people. And I was fine with that. That was enough to help me get through the first day of kindergarten. However, to my chagrin, I learned that there would be then a second day of kindergarten. In fact, five of them in a row, buffered by weekends consisting of 2 days when I could have ample time to myself. But no end to this. It would continue in one form or another through the balance of elementary school, into middle school, into high school, then later into college, then into the workplace. And there was really no end except for decline and death. If things went well, I would be stuck in this system pretty much forever. And this made me feel a lot of anxiety. I was a scared kid. I was squeamish. I was nervous. I didn't get along well with other kids because I was afraid of them. And one workaround that I found for this later on, by the time I was in high school, was getting drunk. Getting drunk enough to let some of my protective layers of aversion fall away, enough to hang out and be present with other people. And I found that I could be fun and funny and take risks and have adventures, and all kinds of things seemed to open up to me through the ingestion of alcohol. And I kept drinking way past the point when any of that stuff was still fun. And I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize unconditionally to everyone I encountered throughout the course of my life. Now, it's on a scale. I think some people I owe less of an apology than I do to others. But no matter who you are, no matter how I affected your life, I'm sorry that I did not do it more skillfully. And I am especially sorry to people that I was awful to when I was really drunk. And when I was spiraling out, and when I'd gotten way past the point where the booze was doing more harm than good, and especially into the point where it was nearly killing me. If I was part of your life during that time, I am very, very sorry. And it's scary, the notion that I can't really have a healthy relationship with this stuff, booze, that is ubiquitous in our world. For a long time after I stopped, I would see big sweaty glasses of beer on billboards, and you know, it would be hard because I'd gotten very much used to that being not just a part of my life, not just what I thought was the only way that I could relate to people in a fun way and have fun. But it was my entire life for years. And it took me a while to get to the point where I wasn't scared to death of even being around it anymore. But I think I'm there now. Because during the COVID era, which, yes, is still ongoing, we're not nearly done with that stuff yet, but during that year and a half of the lockdowns, of the quarantine, of the spikes, all of that, I did not fall off the wagon. I did not drink during that time. And I don't think I'm ever going to have a better opportunity to get wasted and fall off the wagon and give up on not drinking that I would have during that time. One of the things that keeps me from drinking now is that I've always got better stuff to do. And I think I will always have better things to do. And I don't think there's ever going to be a time when it would have been quite as easy to decide, hell, I'll just start drinking again and do it, than it was during that time. So I feel pretty good about not drinking. I try to stay humble about it. But my biggest fear is not falling off the wagon. My biggest fear is not having a community. Because that was a problem for me before I started drinking. It's the reason that I started drinking. It's something I experienced in the early days of social drinking that I had not really experienced before that. It's something I lost when I went way over the line and started alienating everyone around me. And it's getting better now. I'm getting better at reaching out to folks. I'm finding that when I jump, the parachute opens and I often find myself in friendly territory when I land. I still have a very strong fear of being isolated, of being alone and left out. And it gets easier as I get a little bit older to know that booze is not necessary for that. And the way I was doing it, it actually prohibits that. That's still a fear that I have. And I've availed myself of the excellent community that can be found by people who are trying to quit drinking or using or trying to find a different way to relate to themselves and the world and other people. And I won't name the organizations that have helped me out, because you're not really supposed to. And I'm not going to criticize those organizations, because they've really helped some people that I love. And those people, when you criticize those organizations, tend to want to murder you. If I had a criticism, I would say that Bill W. would tell you to lighten up. And I tend to believe that almost everyone could stand to lighten up a lot. Myself very much included. And if anything I say now is making you mad, I would just remind you that if you're mad at me, that's fine. This is just how I treat myself all the time. I am punishment enough. And I've spent a lot of time in my life having end-of-life type conversations with myself. My drinking career ended rather ingloriously when my pancreas exploded. And then I had to go back to the hospital a couple of weeks after that because I had internal bleeding from all of the vomiting that I'd done the first time around. One of the lab techs who helped admit me described what I had the second time as third world problems. So I've been pretty close to the edge. When I was younger, I thought about death a lot. I was pretty acutely suicidal for several intervals, particularly during my college years. And I wasn't that good at planning ahead because I wasn't really planning on being around for more than a year or two out. And I think, aside from my fear of the blank page and aside from my fear of putting myself out there, that's part of why it's been difficult for me to build a career, because I haven't been great at long-term thinking, because I haven't been great at long-term feeling, because not only did I not really want to grow up, but I didn't want to stay young, and I didn't really want to stay alive. And that is something that still scares me a lot. Because once that door is open, it never closes all the way again. It's like the rubber around the edges of the door frays or peels off and it doesn't fit in the frame like it used to. Once you think those thoughts to the extent that I did, when that becomes a big part of your life, you're always going to feel a little bit of that draft, that chill coming through. And I've decided to live with that. I've decided to use it as incentive to create things like this, where I turn my own crap into fertilizer, and hopefully there's some value in it for you, the listener, as well. I can hope that. Because hope is better than fear. And it's still too early to give up. Even after all of this. Especially after all of this. And creating things is how I express my life force. It is something I take seriously, although it's also obviously a joke. Obviously, it's ridiculous. Everything gets washed away so quickly. These are castles made of sand, my friend. A lot of people won't hear this podcast. And when I am gone, which could happen soon, it could be a few more years, a few more decades. My works on this earth will likely be forgotten at some point. I think that's true for the vast majority of us. We can strive to make our marks, and I think that that is its own reward. I believe that creativity for creativity's sake may be the finest kind of creativity there is. I don't promote this show. I don't do any marketing for it. In fact, I do almost everything that I can to make sure that you don't end up listening to it. So if you are listening to it, congratulations. It's buried on the schedule of a small radio station in Los Angeles, and that's how I like it, because that means I can do what I want. I think it's necessary to have some kind of project like that, where you can do what you want, uncut, unedited, unwashed, and let it all hang out. That's valuable to me. I hope it's valuable to you. If not, I would give similar advice to the Ramones and say, just try making your own thing and see how it goes. And if you do that, then you got something of great value from this experience. And take it seriously. If it builds into something where you collaborate and you work with editors, I can say that that's much more rewarding. You get better product out of that. It gets out there into the world. Some people love it. You make connections, not just with other people, but with ideas and currents in the world. All of that stuff gets connected, and it's awesome. The electricity flows. I would pursue that. I recommend it. I've experienced it. I liked it. You might like it too. So don't miss those opportunities. make something and take it seriously, but not too seriously. Because the most sacred seriousness is comedy. And if you laugh, the joke will appear. And just know that it had better be its own reward. This kind of work, or that kind of work, or whatever it is that you do with your life. Because the overwhelming likelihood is that it will all be washed away with time. And that's assuming that this species even has another couple of decades or centuries ahead of it. And that is hardly guaranteed. If I were a betting man, which I very much am, I would put all of my money on chaos ruling the roost from here on out. And on the roost, I would expect to see a flock of black swans. I would say that we're entering an age of ongoing discontinuity. And that 9/11, the subprime mortgage collapse, COVID, all of that, all of the weirdness, Trump, GameStop, everything that just seemed weird, that's going to be the kind of thing that we want to get used to. And I don't think that building a career or a nest egg or anything like that is going to be what it used to be like. I think it's going to be different. And I think it will be overwhelmingly chaotic in the world from now into the foreseeable future. Welcome to the discontinuity already in progress. I would say the skill that is going to matter from here on out is adaptability. As one of my best teachers said, you need to have a mind like silly putty that can adapt to unprecedented circumstances at an alarming rate. I think the people that are able to live in a discontinuity and keep their cool will have all kinds of opportunities that could hardly be imagined in the past. But I think it's going to be really scary for most of us, much of the time. I think that adaptation is going to be rough on us. I can already feel it. It's a little bit rough on me. You may have noticed I've been in a mood lately. And I think that's okay. I think we'll be experiencing a lot of grief. You know, COVID has been the deadliest thing of its kind in a while, and I don't think it's going to be the last one that those of us who survived that will experience. I think the invoice is already coming due for climate change, and as the ice melts, that's going to knock some gnarly stuff out of the ice that's going to make its way out into the world, and we're going to have to deal with it. I think we will have refugee crises as swaths of the world become uninhabitable. I think we'll see supply chains grinding pretty hard as this premium luxury lifestyle that we've created for ourselves, as we've lived like the biggest gluttons in human history since the end of World War II. Obviously, that's coming to an end, I think, sooner than we'd like to accept consciously most of the time. I think even if we know that the end is coming, we tend to behave as though it's not. I believe that that's ill-advised. I think that if we can look into the abyss and see how abyssy it really is, and understand how adaptable we're going to have to be to flourish in the discontinuity, which is already in progress. The damage has long since been done. We don't know how badly we've damaged the world, but it's bad. And most of the things that we're doing right now to try to mitigate the damage would have helped 40 or 50 years ago, but it's way too late now. Only something really dramatic is going to make a difference right now. Do I know what that is? I do not. I think that anyone who says that they know what's going on is selling you a bill of goods. I would put money on that and very few other things, because I think almost all bets are off. I think it's going to be very, very challenging to the degree that we're stuck in old ways of thinking. But I think some amazing opportunities are going to be there and are going to open up like flowers for people who are able to thrive under the conditions of ongoing discontinuity. And I don't know what that's going to look like exactly. I know it's quite frightening. And I know it's hard not to feel really overwhelmed with anxiety all the time. As I said, the anxiety has been my defining characteristic for most of my life. I think I was anxious since I was a small child. I've carried that into most of my relationships. I've sought out depression as a relief from anxiety. I have consciously behaved in an avoidant way to avoid being anxious. The anxiety is real. I can feel it. I can taste it. I can smell it. I'm breathing it in all the time. When I wake up in the morning, there's a split second where I don't know what's going on yet, and then that anxiety finds me, seeps right into me, right out of the atmosphere in the room. So yes, it is scary. But I don't think the normalcy that we think we remember from whatever time we're remembering it from, I don't think that's coming back. I think there's a good chance it never existed that way in the first place. And I think as time goes on, our memories will be reshuffled. We will think about the past differently than we have before. I think that will continue. And I think it is worth it if we can. It behooves us to try to do that in a useful way. I think it's a good idea, if only as a thought experiment, to see what it feels like to take full responsibility for our experiences of the world and to see how we might make them better and how we might make better use of the resources that we have. In my honest moments, I will confide in you that I think a lot of life is luck. But I think it's worth it to focus on the things that we can control to the extent that we are able to focus on those things. And I think it is worth it to believe that we might have options that we have not noticed yet. Because one of the damning things about luck is that we are only lucky enough to be privy to a certain range of the full range of options that we have. And I think we can work on broadening that view a little bit. And I think things that mitigate anxiety are useful in that way, up to the point where you become more agile. I think anxiety at its worst is very constricting. That's my physical experience of it, and that's the effect that I've noticed in my life. It's why I haven't published more, one of the reasons. But I think in another sense, we have to make friends with that. The anxiety, the fear. To really fully feel it. Because there's a lot of other stuff that's packaged up in there. If you're afraid to feel your own fear, then that's because you know this intuitively, and you're afraid of what's going to come out. When you feel that, what else is there? Grief, anger, perhaps overwhelming joy that you don't think you're worthy of because you've been a jerk to a lot of people. Maybe you were drinking too much. It's all there. It's affecting your life one way or the other. And I would say, as much as possible, develop practices and exercises in your life that give you easier access to all of those feelings. And as it comes out, write it down. Get it down, make some music about it, make videos, make that part of your practice. Have a creative practice that's plugged into that. You can use your own crap as fertilizer, believe me. It's one of the most joyous, rewarding things in life for me. It makes me feel like an alchemist when I'm able to do that. I wish that for you. And I wish that you may be free from fear. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe and protected. and may you live with an open heart. May you venture boldly into the places that scare you. And just to reiterate, if I've hurt you in any way, I'm sorry. Please forgive me and thank you. I love you. And sometimes I'm so riddled with anxiety that I just think I'm harshing people's mellow, and sometimes that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If I've harshed your vibe, I am sorry. If I'm doing that right now, I am sorry. Posting a certain amount of cringe is necessary. In order to have good ideas, you have to have a lot of bad ideas. So I'm sorry if I harsh the vibe, but I think it's necessary to post a certain amount of cringe to get it out of your system, to feel that fear and do it anyway, as the self-help book is called. And here we are on this journey together. It's almost over. We're getting close to the end. It's hard to say how much time we've got left. Whatever is going on in your life right now could be over very soon. If it's a big problem, I hope that's the case. I hope you get new and better problems imminently. That is my wish for you. And I think that you can up the odds of that by going straight into the places that scare you. Where you feel the resistance, that's where the juice is. That's where you find the gold, and you're going to need that because we're getting into a scary area. And those of us who feel the fear and do it anyway will have many advantages. I personally think that there's the opportunity for us as a species to work together to create flourishing on Earth like we've never imagined before. I think we have the resources to do that. I think we have to simplify a lot of things. I think we have to complexify some other things. I think we have to stand toe-to-toe with our demons and look them in the eye and understand how we're wired so that we can perform and behave more effectively. I think we have to feel a lot of painful feelings that we've been harboring and carrying around and not making peace with. And I think we can do all of that. I know it's going to be scary as hell, but I think we've entered an age of discontinuity where feeling the fear and doing it anyway is the safest option. And the biggest danger would come from playing it safe. That sounds very pat and cliched, but I think it's true. And I'll leave you with that. You've been listening to Emerson Dameron's Medicated Minutes on Kaechung, 1630 AM, in the vicinity of the Chinatown neighborhood of Los Angeles, California. If you're there, be grateful. Chinatown is cool. It's a good place to be. But if not, you can still listen to the show worldwide on the World Wide Web. Kaechungradio.org. Site for the show is medicated-minutes.com. The loops in the background are created by Chris Rogers. Everything else is created by me. My name is Emerson Dameron. The writer, director, performer, producer, etc. for the show, which is Emerson Dameron's Medicated Minutes, Levity Saves Lives.